On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're discussing a bill working its way through the legislature that would require the national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, to be played or sung before all sporting events at venues that receive any public funding. What are your thoughts on the national anthem bill? It's 800-642-1234. One of the bill's sponsors is Republican State Representative Tony Kurtz from Waniwak. His district includes Juneau County and parts of Richland, Sauk, Vernon, and Monroe counties. He is a member of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. He's an organic farmer and a veteran. Representative Kurtz, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate, and thank you very much for having me this morning.
Good morning. You were motivated to draft this bill after you heard about the Dallas Mavericks not playing it at its games earlier this season. How did that decision by the Mavericks make you feel?
Well, as you mentioned, I am a veteran. I served 20 years on active duty in the Army. My wife had 14 years on active duty in the Army. She was an Army nurse. When I heard that the owner of the Dallas Mavericks just decided one day not to play the national anthem due to whatever reasons he had, maybe he just didn't want the controversy, that did bother me. That did bother other veterans. And so that's why I felt a need to say, you know, I don't want that to happen in our state. And so that's why we, along with myself and Senator Pat Teston from the Stevens Point area, we crafted this piece of legislation and then brought it forward.
Well, when it first came to light in February that the Mavs hadn't been following league policy and playing the anthem, owner Mark Cuban, he issued a statement, and it said in part, "I have always stood for the anthem with the hand over my heart, no matter where I hear it played. But we also hear the voices of those who do not feel the anthem represents them. We feel they also need to be respected and heard because they have not been heard." How do you feel about his words?
You know, and I respect his opinion, and I understand people's concern. But one thing to me, we are one nation. And we have done some unbelievable things over the last 200 years. And we've done some things, frankly, that as a citizen of the United States, I'm not too proud of either. But at the end of the day, we are all Americans. And to me, as a veteran, the national anthem represents all of us. And yes, I understand his point. I understand that some feel they're not being represented. But that's why in this piece of legislation, it has no punishment. It's just a reflection on who we are as a people, why we have the ability, if somebody wants to kneel during the national anthem or to sit or however they decide to do that. We have that right because of literally millions of men and women that have served this country. And at the end of the month, in the end of May, we're going to honor Memorial Day, where over more than a million men and women has given their life so that we have those freedoms. So I understand that. I respect it. But once again, we got to reflect on who we are as a nation and why we have those rights.
Representative Kurtz, you mentioned kneeling. How do you feel about kneeling during the anthem to call attention to racial inequality, to call attention to police brutality?
So I during the committee hearing process, I was asked that same question from some of my colleagues on the other side, and I was very frank. I said, you know, personally, that does bother me. And I don't like that. And to be honest with you, Kate, I should have that right not to like that. But I also know that if somebody wants to kneel, they have that right in this country because of all the men and women that have served before me and during when I served so that we could have those rights. And that's what I think gets lost in this entire conversation is our nation, for all its good and for, yes, some bad, we still have these rights that, frankly, and I've been in a lot of different parts of the world where they don't have those rights. And I just want us to make sure that we remember that and that, you know, we are all one big nation, one big family. It's dysfunctional at times. I'm not going to lie about that. But it's something that I think we can – I have respect for them. I'm not going to lie. I actually respect that they have the guts to do that because they know they're going to have the backlash. But, I mean, I personally don't like that, but I respect their right to do that.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Republican State Representative Tony Kurtz. His district includes the city of Reedsburg, Juneau County, other counties as well. You can join in. Do you support passing a state law that would require the national anthem to be played before sports? What are your thoughts about this legislation? 800-642-1234. Let's look a little bit more closely. The language of your bill is broad enough that is it's seen as applying to any publicly funded venue, including parks and school grounds. How would you expect this to work with youth sports?
You know, I would like for instance, when I leave my beautiful area of Waniwak and I drive down to the Madison to the Capitol, I get on the interstate, and along the interstate, DeForest has a beautiful sports complex. And it's quite simple. At the morning, say 8 o'clock in the morning, prior to all the activities that are going to happen on a Saturday or a Sunday there, they could play the national anthem over their loudspeakers there. The same thing in Richland Center. I'm proud to represent Richland Center. They have a very nice sports complex, baseball, soccer field, just outside of this north there of the city. They could do the same thing. You know, I had a conversation with some folks from UW that said, how would this work? And I would say, you know what, UW system, you determine that. I don't expect you to do it at, you know, intramural sports or things like that, but at a Badger game, yeah, I would certainly hope you would do this. And I guess to your point, Kate, you know, this isn't unprecedented because right now in public schools and obviously public funded schools, you know, every morning it's required to play the national anthem or do the Pledge of Allegiance. And so we actually do this. You know, there is precedence for that. There's not a penalty for that either. If a school for some reason doesn't do that, if a child or a parent doesn't want their child to participate, there's no punishment for that. They have the right not to participate. But we are actually doing that now in our public schools each morning.
There are no enforcement mechanisms in your bill, like fines. Why is that?
Because I do think that's crossing the line. I know I've been criticized for forced patriotism. I want this to be voluntary. And like I mentioned earlier, when I just mentioned about the Pledge of Allegiance and the national anthem in schools each school day, you know, that too does not have any penalty or any fine or anything. I do think that's crossing the line when you say if you don't do this, this is your penalty. I think that is crossing the line, and I've actually been very, very vocal on that. And so I do want to say one other thing. You know, when this first was introduced and we did have a hearing in the Assembly Committee, I was very happy that the Wisconsin American Legion, the Wisconsin Veterans of Foreign Wars, two of our largest veteran organizations, both came and testified in support of this legislation. So, you know, it is something that, you know, a good percentage of veterans are supportive of, obviously our two largest veteran organizations. And so that's kind of, you know, I just wanted to get that for, because I'm not hearing that in newsprint or the media about, you know, our two largest veterans organizations are also supportive of this.
Let's bring in Adam now in Madison with thoughts on this bill. Adam, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Doing well. What would you like to say about the bill?
I just am in shock that the Republican Party thinks that this is a winning issue. It's a big waste of time. And if you don't think as legislators that in Wisconsin we have more serious issues, you should really resign.
Okay. So, and Adam here is saying that this shouldn't be a focus, Representative Kurtz.
Well, and I get a lot. I get some comments about, you know, is this all you're doing? The answer is no. We are doing so many other things down in Madison. But to me, as a veteran, this is important. And I'll explain this. So last Monday, a week ago Monday, I was down in Richland Center, and I was doing a listening session. And the vast majority of the people at that listening session were my age or older. And they weren't necessarily on my side of the aisle, so to your caller's question. And I mentioned, I said, you know, in my opinion, we're at a point in our country where we're very similar to what during the Vietnam War. And every one of those heads in that audience shook their head like, yes. And we are. We are at a very strange place in our country right now. And to me, this is important because we have to get back to who we are as a nation. And I mentioned it earlier with you, Kate. We are one country. And at the end of the day, we all do have to get along. And to say that I am not somewhat nervous, I don't want to use this, or scared about our path forward right now, because we are on shaky ground. Mm-hmm. We are divided. And at the end of the day, as a nation, we have to remember, okay, we are one nation. We have so many good things to offer. Do we have work to do? You better believe it. But we can do that as one nation. So go ahead, Kate. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm just going to reintroduce you here. We have Representative Tony Kurtz on the line as we discuss the national anthem bill that passed his chamber. Do you compete in sports on publicly funded fields? How do you feel about the national anthem being required before games? What does the Star-Spangled Banner mean to you? And regarding ag-related legislation, how do you feel about grants for the tourism industry and marketing the state's cranberry industry? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more Stay Cap on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking with Republican Representative Tony Kurtz of Waniwak. His district is in the central part of the state. He's a certified organic farmer on 230 acres. And we will be looking at ag-related legislation and the rise of farm bankruptcies in Wisconsin in a moment. But first, let's go back to the phones with June in Stevens Point. Hi, June. What would you like to say about the National Anthem Bill?
Hello. Yes, I have two things I'd like to say about it, and they're kind of related. In terms of the national anthem, I am an American. I stand for the flag, and I stand for the flag. It's not just a song. To me, it represents America, but even more, it represents all those people who bled and died for this country so that I could be at this moment at this time. So I do it out of respect and pride and deep thoughts about all the people who went before me. And secondarily, I think the counterforce here, really, the people who refuse to and are making an issue and sit on their behinds really have no perspective in history. But even more, this is part of the cancel culture. You're trying to get rid of things that are significant and represent America. America has a culture, a proud history.
Let's get Representative Kurtz to jump in here. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, thank you for those comments, because I couldn't agree more. And like I said earlier, Kate, you know, we're at a period in our country that we do need to try to get some unification, try to get something that's bigger than all of us. And to me, and once again, you know, the national anthem speaks that to me. So,
Dan in Appleton has thoughts. Dan, go ahead.
Follow up on that previous one. The only cancel culture here is the representative trying to cancel people's respectful protests. If you don't like the fact that people are sitting or kneeling during the national anthem, maybe you should address the root causes of those issues rather than trying to do some grandstanding here and just pull on the heartstrings and force patriotism. As a veteran, I would expect you to know better.
And so, Dan, and Dan's comments there, if you couldn't hear because of the phone line, you know, looking to address the root causes of structural racism that also run against what he sees as people's choice to, you know, to listen to the national anthem in what way they would like.
You know, and I'll go back to my service. My wife was an Army nurse. I flew helicopters. And when I went back to Iraq in 2003, unfortunately, you know, I would put body bags in the back of a helicopter. And I can honestly say in the military, we don't see black or white. At least I didn't, at least the people I work with. So, you know, I understand there's racism in all nations. Like I said earlier, we have work to do. I don't dismiss that. But I also know that at the end of the day, particularly in the military, they have a job to do. Race does not come into it. You take the task at hand and you complete the mission. And I just want to have the message that we are one nation, that we do have to get along. Do we have work to do? I've throughout this call, I've acknowledged we have work to do. And so to me, we can do that as one nation.
We're talking state politics with Republican State Representative Tony Kurtz. He represents Juneau County, parts of four nearby counties, including the city of Reedsburg. Representative, let's look at ag-related legislation now. You support three bills that would specifically boost grants for cranberry and potato marketing in the tourism industry. What do you see that these industries need more tax support?
Well, basically to develop those markets, most of your listeners know, at least I hope they know, that cranberry, we're the largest producer of cranberries in the world. It's one of our bigger exports. And we actually don't put a lot of research, a lot of funding behind that. And so this would provide that boost to that industry to kind of take it to the next level. And the same thing with potatoes. A lot of people don't realize, you know, we're one of the top producers in the
third largest potato producing state.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so let's really take advantage of that. And something that, I mean, maybe we'll have time, you know, Senator Joan Baldwin and I, a few weeks ago, introduced an agricultural export bill that basically would put $5 million over the next several years into promoting our agricultural exports to include cranberries, to include potatoes, to include our wonderful dairy products and cheese. And it's interesting because, you know, our $104 billion agricultural economy, we export less than 3%. I think last year in 2020 was around $3 billion of exports. So we have a tremendous opportunity to grow those exports, cranberries, potatoes, et cetera. And so that's something that I'm really excited about as we move forward the next couple of weeks to get that bill across the finish line.
Yeah, I mean, how would they achieve these benchmarks? That is a lot of movement for exports.
Well, and so I personally, Kate, I think we should have goals, you know, and I actually had this conversation with the Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection. Great folks over there. They're doing a good job, but they need some resources. And those resources obviously is money to put behind that. And we've never, as a state, we've never really made a commitment to expand those exports. And so just to have a benchmark, you know, the Wisconsin cheese makers last session when we introduced this bill, which, by the way, passed by with 99 votes in the assembly, and unfortunately it never got voted on in the Senate because, you know, obviously on the horrible COVID hit our state. But but the point is, the cheesemakers talked about doubling in a decade. So, you know, have a goal, you know, it's based on, you know, 25% increase from, you know, at the end of this year, we'll kind of go with those numbers. And I think let's set a goal, and nobody has said, no, that's not achievable. They all understand it's a goal. And it's something I think we, well, let's be honest, as Wisconsin farmers, Wisconsin processors that produce all our water, food, cheese, et cetera, they want this. And they are excited for an opportunity to expand those exports worldwide.
Very quickly here, we only have a few moments left, but we've talked a number of times on the program about the rise of farm bankruptcies in our state. How do you think lawmakers should be responding?
Well, it's to looking in economic areas in our rural communities. I mean, that's something, and unfortunately, you know, this has been going on for several years. You know, it happened actually, you know, 2015 to now, but it's investment into rural communities. I mean, everybody loves, you know, rural farms and rural communities, but now it's like, okay, let's put our money where our mouth is, and that's with broadband, that's with economic development. You know, I was down in Richland Center, like I said the other day, and I'll be down there again now to today. You know, they haven't experienced growth in almost 15 years. Well, right now they have an opportunity for that, but they need some economic help to get, you know, to get them across the finish line to get more housing. And so we have to invest in rural communities, and that's something that we haven't done very, very effectively in the last several years.
Representative Kurtz, thank you for joining us.
Kate, thank you, and all your listeners. Have a great day. I appreciate the time.
You too. Tony Kurtz is a Republican state representative from Waniwak. He was first elected to the Assembly in 2018. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Democratic State Representative Dora Drake of Milwaukee. She was newly elected to the Assembly last November. We look at her priorities for her native Milwaukee and why representation matters with diverse voices and perspectives at the table. That's after a news update on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Democratic State Representative Dora Drake of Milwaukee was born and raised in her district. She said in a Wisconsin Eye interview on the campaign trail last summer that through her background in social work and reentry programs, she has seen firsthand how policies miss the holes. Do you live in Milwaukee or Glendale? What do you want to ask your representative or call her attention to? What effect does representation and greater diversity have on our governing bodies and how policies take shape? It's 800-642-1234. Representative Dora Drake, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me. It was so exciting to hear, Kate, you know, you and your team reaching out and just talk about not only the importance of, you know, Black representation in the state, but what we need to do to move the state forward to be better. So thank you for having me this morning.
Yeah, you're welcome. You were sworn into the Assembly in January. What are your first impressions of how state government operates?
Oh, my goodness. A load of questions. But honestly, it was a mixture of what I anticipate to be in a little bit of shock. And when I say it's what I anticipate to be, it's because of the gridlock or partisan gridlock that I expected would happen. So that was one of the reasons I ran. You know, I come from, my background is someone that, you know, was a social worker in the community, someone that would work with people at the front lines. And I would hear firsthand how people are so frustrated with their politics. And people didn't think that anything would change from it. So that's why I initially ran, to be different on what it means to be a policymaker, especially in the state. And I knew part of it was the gridlock that we face in our state. So that didn't necessarily surprise me. But it also, was a rude awakening in a way, just because there is so much at stake. We're still coming out of the pandemic, which thankfully, you know, we're doing great when it comes to our vaccine rollouts and our distributions, but there, people are still hurting. Mm. And so as a leader, that's something that I don't take lightly. So when I think about what I'm trying to push, not only for District 11, but also for the state, it boils down to what can be done effectively that can somehow pass despite what's happening in our government to ensure that people's lives are better. And so that's been my focus, and part of that has been focusing on not only elevating issues that are important, that should get more attention, but also issues that aren't being talked about. And having the perspective of a Black woman, just from my own experiences, living in Milwaukee, and also, you know, just hearing what the issues are front hand and foreseeing issues that are coming is what I think is important as legislatures. That we somehow find a solution in any capacity to pass it, despite the gridlock that we may have.
Yeah, I mean, you say, you know, people are hurting. People are hurting in my district. How do you convey the hurt and translate that into policy and make your fellow lawmakers understand the hurt?
Right. So part of it is definitely the constituent follow-up. And that's probably the most important thing I think anyone should tell you, is because you are the person that you're representing. The people that elected you are the people that you serve above everything else. And so I've made a priority that whenever we get requests to our office, that we respond quickly. A lot of it has been unemployment claims. And so we know that clearly there's still been a backlog of unemployment, but thankfully I know that DWD has been putting a lot of work and effort to pushing that forward, and those claims have been getting resolved. With some of those other things that we hear from constituents is, you know, what are you doing at the state capitol making sure that this doesn't occur, whether it's redistricting or whether it's obviously vaccines was a huge one when it came to public health safety. And so it's making sure that obviously when we're on the floor, that our vote reflects that. But also when we do have those conversations with other colleagues in the legislature, letting them know these are the stories, you know, and it's not just coming from me. So I can say, because if I want to convince anyone of what I know are issues in my district and just the state, I let them know, look, this is what my constituents have been saying, and here's the data to prove it. And I know that people have different talking points, so it's important that you have both and they have proof of it. One other thing is also foreseeing things that people aren't talking about. And what I've noticed is really the divide when it comes to technology, because this pandemic has shifted everything for us to really depend on it like we haven't before. And so as we're coming out of it, that is one area that's not going to go away in terms of how we depend on it. And so what I've noticed in the district is people that would have to use technology, whether it be for schools or work, and there were people that couldn't access it, whether they couldn't afford it, and also truly how it really is impacting every aspect of our lives, whether it's the industries that are changing. I know Milwaukee is becoming a tech hotspot, and those are things that we need to be talking about, because there are other states and other people that are trying to incorporate tech more into just our social norm, right? So what I don't want to happen is, one, that we can't compete on a national level when it comes to those jobs, but in addition to that, making sure that we don't have it additional disparity that we add on to, especially when it comes to people of color, people from poor communities, and making sure that we can get a ball forward on that versus addressing it before it's too late.
We're talking with State Representative Dora Drake, who is a Democrat, represents a district that includes parts of Milwaukee and Glendale. You can join in. What would you like to ask her about her priorities in office? How do you think having more people of color in public office will change the way our state is governed? 800-642-1234 to join in. I want to ask you, Governor Evers proposed diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. They were part of the nearly 400 items the legislature's Joint Finance Committee took out of the budget, including his plan to create a cabinet-level chief equity officer. What comes to mind about these budget actions?
Those are budget items that I definitely supported. Governor Evers came to the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus. I'm the chair, who is Sheila Stubbs, and I'm actually also the vice chair for the Black Caucus. And so one thing we as a caucus wanted to ensure was that these were items that we were pushing, because it's important. There's also this talk about equity, right, in light of what's happened nationally throughout last year and even this year. And so equity isn't just a – and the question sometimes I get is, what's the difference between equity and quality, right? Because initially in social justice circles, you would talk about equality, and that'll change to equity. The difference with equity is that you're giving the amount of resources necessary to put everyone on the same playing field versus giving someone just the same amount of resources, which would be technically equality. And so with equity is making sure that we fill in those gaps so everyone's at the same playing field. And so when we talk about having a cabinet solely for our office for equity, that ensures that we have someone at the administrative level that addresses those concerns head on, and it shows that our leadership really takes that to heart. And so I wish that those were things that could have been pushed even more, because I know the finance committee is still going through the list of items and what they're going to vote on. But that's something that our state truly needs. When we talk about, equity and what's happening in our state, it's important to realize that the reasons why that's so important is because there are people that have been left out for so long. And when I say that, I'm talking about Black communities, brown communities, communities that are poor, LGBTQ, disabled communities and veterans. And so it's important that you have an office that is intentional about looking at every level of government that can determine, okay, these are the issues. This is where the holes are in those communities. Mm-hmm. What can we do to improve them? And so those are things that we were able to talk to Governor Evers about in person. Well, not in person, virtually, of course, but able to have a meeting with him to hear some of those initiatives and have questions as to how it can be improved.
I'm wondering, in your chamber, do you feel welcome by other legislators, or how do you feel like you still have to fight to be heard?
I don't want to say it's difficult to answer because it's quite simple. Being a Black woman in politics means that you, one, obviously have to provide results for the community, right? Mm-hmm. Because we can't afford to wait for anyone. And so when we hear about what happened with the funding that was sent, supported for the Historical Black Society last week to just some of the resolutions that were passed through assembly earlier this year, everyone knows there's a game to play, right, when it comes to politics. And so for me, at times it is difficult just because, one, you make sure that you're heard, right? Whenever I meet with people, I'm very candid when I talk to people about where I stand on issues, but where I'm also willing to work on them, because I truly believe that things need to be done in a bipartisan manner. Mm. With that being said, there are certain things that, one, you either have to choose to be vocal about to get, obviously, attention, press, this, that, and the other, or to maneuver in a way that can get solutions for your community. And so at times it is very difficult being a Black woman in this space, but it's also necessary. I know that the Journal Sentinel reached out and did a story on how my election made it where the amount of women, or Black women, I should say, and our government now represents the population of Black women. And so obviously the numbers would suggest that's a great thing. Well, it's a great thing if our impact had the same amount of impact, right? Because there's only 10 of us compared to how many, And so that's the paradox there. Like, yes, is it great that my election has now made it where Black women are just as equally represented population-wise? Cool. But my thing is, I'd rather have the impact where we can truly not only be heard, but have, legislation that actually improves our communities intentionally, whether it's surrounding health, whether it's surrounding our education system, our criminal justice system, which is something I know is close to my heart because of the work that's done there.
And we're going to talk, we're going to talk more about criminal justice and what you see there. We have Democratic State Representative Dora Drake on the line as we discuss diverse perspectives and representation, how to work across the aisle, her legislative priorities in her first term in the Assembly representing her native Milwaukee. Is it important for the state's lawmakers to reflect the makeup of its residents? Do you live in Milwaukee's Northside neighborhoods or Glendale in the 11th Assembly District? What do you want to ask your representative? Still time, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're talking with Democratic State Representative Dora Drake of Milwaukee, who's serving her first term in the Assembly. Her background is in social work and reentry services, formerly a coordinator at the Milwaukee-based nonprofit, the Center for Self-Sufficiency. And Representative Drake is with us for about 10 more minutes. John is joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, John. What would you like to bring up?
Well, first of all, I'd like to congratulate the guest on being elected. And I think it's a good thing for underrepresented people to vote for people who look like them. This is good. But regarding the equity, inclusion, diversity issue that the governor is promoting, I see this as just a replacement of the failed affirmative action issues that liberals have promoted in the past. And it seems to me that the guest and others should be talking frequently about what underrepresented people, marginalized people, could do to improve their lot. And things like not having children until you're married, finishing your education, and staying off drugs would be the important first steps toward achieving equality that they desperately need.
Representative Drake, go ahead. Go ahead.
For calling in and sharing your thoughts. But, you know, I respectfully disagree with what you're saying, just because there are unseen barriers that are placed even before people may have the choice to do that. And I say that speaking from someone that's actually worked in the criminal justice system and has seen some of those issues firsthand. So what do I mean by that? There, you could have someone that, let me backtrack, because I'll tell a story of one of my clients when I worked in the justice system. She was a young woman, probably just turning 18, right? And so obviously when we work with people that go through the justice system, at that time, you know, yes, we were supposed to make sure that they went to court and they, you know, would appear, but we would provide services on the back end or referrals to see if anything else was missing. Mm-hmm. And what people don't see when it comes to those issues is that, one, there are unspoken laws and policies that are in place. Mm-hmm. And truth be told, people that still treat marginalized people, just due to their race, their gender, their sexual orientation, the amount of income they have. I think we like to think that all of us are good people, and we are, but all of us have shortcomings. And with that, those things still apply and unfortunately have larger effects on those communities. And so this individual young lady, she had a pending case for prostitution, right? But what happened was, one, in order for anyone to actually have the case, you have to have someone that's actually seeking that, right? And mm-hmm. So what I've seen a lot of times is that, especially young women, would be charged with this, but the people that they'd be doing business with weren't being charged at all in those cases. So mm-hmm. there's an area where, you know, gender has a role. Another area is that, due to her background in terms of not having necessarily the best family support, I'm not saying that people can't make their choices, because at the end of the day, people still have a choice. But you have to simultaneously also accept the fact that there are things in place that make it even harder for people to get to where they need to be. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm focused on, is making sure, what can we do as legislators to ensure people have the best quality of life? And the truth is, when it comes to marginalized communities, there are things that have been intentionally not put forth, whether it's lack of funding, whether it's people not wanting to address it, or whether it's people that just don't want to see those marginalized communities actually be better and be in those spaces where they're productive. I personally think if everyone is in a better space to be productive, all of us win.
Mm.
Period, you know? And so when we have these barriers that are up, we have to ask, what's the purpose of that? And so that's where I'm coming from. I understand where the gentleman was coming from, and there is some merit, but in order to have that, you simultaneously have to accept the fact that there are barriers that are still in place that make it harder for marginalized communities to be to live their best lives.
You've worked with the corrections department on reentry services, and I'm wondering, what gaps did you see? What policies do you want to advance in the legislature in this area, specifically on reentry services?
Yeah, so there's a couple. Two gaps that I noticed was even people coming out from prison into the community. And so the program that I was working at the time at the Center for Self-Sufficiency was a grant where we would actually go into the prisons and do a wellness sort of session program, you can say, mm-hmm. where we talk about wellness, address your trauma, but also see, you know, do you have your documents in place, whether it's your resume, your birth certificate, ID, all those things before you were released. And one of the issues was that we had a huge waiting list of people that wanted and qualified to be part of this program, but there just simply wasn't enough people to actually do the work. So that's one area that can definitely be addressed as to where can we ensure that the people that are now waitlisted are removed from that. And I will say that I believe DOJ has shared that because of COVID, they were actively trying to get people out of prisons that didn't have to be. And so that's one thing that I know that they have worked on and definitely succeeded in and still striving to do better. The other area is this gap between people coming out and finding employment or just finding their, I don't want to say their niche, but finding things you need to survive, right? Like you need a job, you need housing, you need some form of transportation, and you need to find a way to take care of yourself. And so one thing is addressing what it means to ensure that different apprenticeships and the skills in the apprenticeships field are connected to actual employers. Because we would have individuals that would go through our training program. So we would do a workforce readiness workshop where we would talk about budgeting. We talked about preparing for a job interview. You know, what things to look for, how to identify your skill sets. It's because the people I've worked with have had, you shouldn't be shocked, but you would be shocked at the amount of talent they have. You know, these are book writers, these are creators, these are people that have had years of training in some sort of trade. And so one is making sure that they're prepared for that, but then what's really happening with the follow-up?
Yeah.
You know, are they hired? So thankfully, I know that there are agencies and nonprofits now that are actively making sure that there's no bias input when it comes to the hiring process. But in that being said, also addressing the mental health that comes with that. And I think that's an unspoken thing we don't talk about that needs to be addressed even more.
Representative Drake, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. This was a great conversation. And, you know, I always let people know that if you have questions, please reach out to my office for concerns, because I want people to know that I'm here not only to represent you, but to actually provide solutions for our state.
State Representative Dora Drake, elected to the Assembly in November, a Democrat, represents a district that includes parts of Milwaukee and Glendale. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report. You're listening to the Ideas Network.